We have quorum.
We have quorum.
Good evening. The Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting has now commenced. It is February 5th at 4 p.m. This development meeting was now is now commenced. This is a virtual meeting. We ask that you mute until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in, to unmute to speak, please dial star six on your phone. Only use the chat function to request to speak. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio. Neto, would you like to do roll call?
Thank you. Maggie Amado-Tellez.
Present.
Mindy Bernstein. Absent. Vicky Casino. Absent. Logan Havens.
Present.
Thank you, Logan. Serena Warake. Warake. I believe is absent. Lori Mazurbo.
Present.
Thank you. Ann Miski.
Present.
Thank you. Robert Ojeda.
Present.
Tisha Tallman.
Present.
Alan Solat.
Present.
Thank you. Jim Toffel.
I'm here.
Thank you. Kenny Wong. Don't see Kenny. And Jay Young is absent.
Ex officio members and Shanika.
Ann Cheneka,
I'm here.
Mike Edmonds.
Present.
Thank you. Okay, you can move on.
Very good. Now we'll approve the January minutes. You should have already received them. Are there any questions or comments before I move to approve? I move to approve. Do I hear a second?
I'll
Second.
second.
All those opposed or all those in favor say aye.
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 Any oppose? Any abstentions?
I abstain because I wasn't present for the meeting.
I need to abstain as well for not being present. Next agenda item is call to the audience. Call to the audience is limited to 3 minutes per speaker for a total of 10 minutes. All speakers must share their name to be recorded in the meeting minutes. The call to audience may not result in discussion with members of the commission. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. The commission members may only respond to criticism and request that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. Members of the audience may still participate on agenda items as per the bylaws of the commission. Are there any audience members who would like to be heard?
I have a hand up, Shalini Herbin, if I pronounce that correctly.
Okay, go ahead, Shalini.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. Oh, I didn't hear you when you did the roll call, so I was concerned. I didn't hear my name when you did the roll call.
Well, we're just a roll call for commission members.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
Sorry.
thank you.
You have 3 minutes, Shalini.
Oh, I'm presenting first. Oh, I didn't see that. Just okay.
No, Shalini, who do you represent?
Miracle Ridge.
Okay, we're not doing presentations yet.
Oh, okay.
Bear with us.
Thank you.
Any audience members?
No, let's see, Bob Delaney.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, Bob.
I just wanted to say that at the encouragement of Jim Toffel at a recent meeting, I did participate for the first time in the point in time count. And it was a meaningful experience. And I'm very glad I did participate and just wanted to pass that along.
Thank you, Bob. Anyone else?
Good job, Bob.
Thanks.
No other
Okay.
hands.
All right. Then we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is city and county updates. We will do the HCD update first. Anne, are you doing that?
Yeah, I'll be brief. I know you have a lot on the agenda today. Did want to make sure the commissioners know that this past week, mayor and council did go ahead and adopt a emergency housing and homelessness declaration. And so some of that was from discussions that this group had. And so wanted to make sure you know that that was they formally declared an emergency declaration. I will be bringing some information to this commission over the next couple months in terms of what that means, and with the help of Corin from Planning and Development Services, the more the waivers and different types of accommodations that we will be making if folks want to set up either emergency shelters or safe outdoor sites such as Star Village or safe parking sites. So we'll bring more over the next couple months, but that was formally declared this week. The other thing, thank you, Bob, for the point and for volunteering for the point in time. I know a lot of people in this group volunteered. And I was a volunteer and really grateful for our continuum of care and TPCH for all the hard work that went into it. And then lastly, the city will be starting our kind of spring community engagement events. So I'll have Neto send out information on some of our spring public meetings that we have coming up for some of our projects and/or some of our shelters. Looks like Alan has a question.
Yes, two things. One, is the emergency declaration, is there something in writing or is it public or is something to look at or?
There is an ordinance and a resolution both, so we can send that out so folks can see what it means. The one caveat I will say is that it for the safe parking and the safe outdoor sites, it does give us 90 days to develop a formal process for how folks can apply for those. But we'll make sure to send you the link, Alan.
Thank you. And the other thing is, I did the point in time count and also found it really interesting and enjoyable in a way that's, I'm not sure I can explain why it was enjoyable, but I did like it and I'll be doing it again next year.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Anne. Next up is PDSD update.
Don't believe anyone is here from Planning Development Social Services.
Okay, then let's go ahead and skip to Pima County updates.
Sophia, you have co-host, so you can share your screen.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask the city staff really quick. Were you all able to send out information about our gap funding recommendations to the commission? I just want to make sure to your commission because I just want to make sure that that they've seen those before I start sharing my screen and confuse everybody if they haven't seen it yet. I don't want to overwhelm people with visuals and all that. So if that is the case, then I will go ahead and just pop those up really quick here. Excuse me. So we had our general fund, we had our general funds gap funding applications closed, and the evaluation panel met, and they we had like a lot of really good gosh, am I sharing my screen? Okay. Now I
Now you are.
think I am now. Okay. We had a lot of great applications. We received 18 proposals. All told, there were 965 units proposed, a little over $16.5 million that were requested. We only had $5 million to give out. Three of the projects were already awarded LIHTC, and seven were planning to submit applications for low-income housing tax credits. And 11 new development projects were applied for, and seven preservation and renovation projects, and two tribal community projects. We were obviously not able to award all of the projects. There were lots and lots of them, but I will show you the ones that the evaluation panel recommended. And there was three for the El Pueblo housing developments that were awarded. So that's Stone and Speedway, Mania Davis, and the Craycroft Towers and Lee Street duplexes. There were so many good applications that we really had to divide them up. The panel decided to award a lot of them $500,000 each, with the exception of the Shasta apartments for Cope, because they were imminently closing on those, and one of our other proposers pulled their application, so we were able to afford them a little bit more. These were endorsed by our Affordable Housing Commission, and now they are going to go to the Board of Supervisors on their next meeting on the 17th of February. So that's the share about the recommendations. Does anybody have any questions about that? Don't know if I can see everybody, so I'm relying on this. Oh, okay. So if there are no questions on that, I'm going to just grab my little cheater about the draft regional 10-year regional housing strategy and funding plan. You had all received this in your materials for this meeting, but I will remind you too that we've been bringing this to you all as we went along. We're a little over a year into this process. We're about to take it back to our Pima County Regional Affordable Housing Commission to endorse, and then we will take it to the Board of Supervisors. It includes five goals and 27 strategies, and it's a 136-page document. So the five goals, 27 strategies, and we've got a $413 million funding plan with an estimate of the need that can be met or still needs to be met. Obviously, the county is not going to be able to come up with the $413 million over 10 years, but we're hoping to come up with $250 million. So we have like different partners, jurisdictional partners are going to help us meet those needs. So we have the roles and responsibilities for all of those different partners. We are excited to have a community revitalization area that we're going to be adding to our plan, our strategy and funding plan. So it'll help with some unincorporated areas that the developers may be able to get LIHTC awards for in our county. So if that once this goes to the board and they accept it, the Board of Supervisors accepts it then or approves it, then that will be included. And then it will also include metrics, reporting, and continued oversight by the Regional Affordable Housing. And we've got our plan is aligned with our affordable housing policy, also Tucson Housing Affordability Strategy past plan. The Prosperity Initiative, the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan for the region, Pima Prospers, Comprehensive Land Use Plan, and One Pima. And it's really been a really great collaborative effort on the part of a lot of our county departments and HCD and other jurisdictional partners. There's a lot here. I realize that. And I don't have that much time to kind of like break into this, but as far as this goes, does anyone have any questions, like kind of right off the top, before I go?
That doesn't look like there are any hands raised, Sophia.
Okay.
So with
All
that, we
right.
thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Tisha, PDSD
Yep.
Director Corinne Manning is
Great.
an attendee. I can't make her a panelist, but she can make a presentation if she'd like to give an update.
Okay, great. Corinne, if you could give the PDSD update, that would be great.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, sorry, I joined a little late. So Anne may have already given the update on the Housing and Homelessness Emergency Declaration. I think that's our main update. Was that already shared with the commission?
She
Yeah.
did.
Okay, great. Then I have nothing further to add.
Okay, well, thank you, Corinne.
Thank you all.
The next agenda item is the Home Gap Funding Scoring. And Andrew, it looks like Andrew with the HCD Community Development Administrator will reintroduce the Home Gap Funding Scoring process. Eight applicants for the home funding will present their proposals to the commission. Commissioners will score each applicant's proposal for project funding. So, Andrew Paredes.
Thank you. And good afternoon, folks. Hopefully you all are seeing my screen. Did I get a thumbs up if
Yes.
okay,
Yes.
great. So by way of introduction, I'm Andrew Paredes. I am the Community Development Administrator here at the City of Tucson's Housing and Community Development Department. As Tisha indicated, this is the project impact presentation portion of our Home Gap Funding RFP. First off, I'd like to ask if any commission members have a conflict of interest as it relates to the applicants you see below and this RFP.
I do.
Looks like Jim Toffel has a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest. So, anybody else?
Andrew, I have a question. This is Sophia.
Yes.
I'm on the evaluation panel for the Home Gap. Is it okay if I stick around for this or should I get off?
This is a public meeting, so it is
Okay.
certainly fine for you
Okay.
to stick around and listen and observe.
Okay, thank you.
As indicated, Sophia is on our community scoring panel, not just the scoring these presentation, and in fact, not scoring these
I'm
presentations.
not scoring these.
Well, then it looks like we have one commission member, Jim Toffel, recusing himself. So, for the rest of the commission members, I will send out score sheets for you tomorrow morning after these presentations. And I will ask you all to have scores back by February 10. And I'll go over those details, when we wrap up here as well. What you're expecting next, we're going to have eight presentations. The presentations are to be no more than 5 minutes once the presenter starts. I will give a very, monotone 1 minute remaining warning in each presentation as they come up on the 1 minute mark, so folks know how to moderate their time accordingly. Members of the commission are not able to ask questions. This is simply a listen, review and score exercise. So no questions before or after. The order of the presentations you see there on your screen. So we will start with Newport's 3767 East Grant Road project presentation, and we will go down the list from there. These, to remind you all, these are the criteria on which you, the commission, will be scoring. And I will send these out to you along with your score sheets tomorrow as well. The meeting is being recorded, so you can always look back as a commission member and review the presentations and the recordings as you need. And you received any presentation materials, slide materials in advance. So you all have had a chance to look those over as well. Any questions from the commission members before we get started? I'm going to stop sharing now and invite our first presenter, Newport, for the 3767 East Grant Road project to bring his or herself on and ask, would you like me to share your slides or would you like to I would
control
that
like to.
yourself.
I'd like to do that.
Fair enough. Then we will take it away with Newport's presentation. And once you get started, I will start the timer.
David, you can share screen.
Thank you very much. So, good afternoon. My name is David Wall. I am the president of Newport SW. We are the developer of a proposed project at 3767 East Grant Road. This is just about a block and a half west of Alvernon. So it is located in the Grant Alvernon planning area, which is a community revitalization area for purposes of the 9% or of the qualified allocation plan. It is obviously, as you know, Grant Road is undergoing a major widening and improvement project right now. It will be done before our project is placed in service, which means that our residents will have exceptionally good access to transit, to shopping, to services. It is close to many grocery stores. It's close to an El Rio Health Center. It is not far from Tucson Medical Center, which is a major employer as defined in the qualified allocation plan. So it scores very well for the 9% competitive program. One thing you will have noticed that it was not included in the Pima County gap financing applications, and the reason for that is very simple. We went through fairly extensive and lengthy negotiations with the Southern Arizona Association for the Visually Impaired, who is the owner, to get an option on it, and we're not able to secure that option until December, the end of December. So we simply could not apply to Pima County. So hopefully the fact that while we would have loved to have that had that money, the fact that we didn't get the money isn't a reflection of the fact that it wasn't approved because it wasn't submitted. So the project itself, it is a 2-acre rectangular parcel on the north side of Grant Road, and as I said, it has excellent access to a wide variety of community services, giving it a maximum location amenity score for the 9% application. It is currently occupied by three vacant buildings that Savvy no longer uses. Two of them are modular, and one is a building that will be demolished to make way for the project. As I said, it is within the Grant Alvernon planning area. It is in the Dodge Flower neighborhood, and it is in Ward 3. The Ward 3 office has endorsed this project. We have a letter from Council Member Dahl supporting this project, which is in the slide material. So you should be able to read that without my blowing it up. It is a narrow site, long to the north south, fairly narrow to the east west. What we envision is 2 3-story walk up buildings. It will be fairly similar to two of the projects that Newport has completed in the past. If this is approved, this will be our fourth project in Tucson, and I have some slides showing what they are. While we could go up and may go up in terms of income eligibility to area 60% of area median income, we plan to set the rents at no higher than 50% of AMI. This is partially a function of the location. As Grant and Alvernon has a reputation, probably unfair in many ways, as
1 minute.
1 minute, thank you, has a reputation. In order to make sure that we can attract tenants, we intend to keep rents lower than could be possible. Just some very quick examples of our work. Newport at Amphi, 40 units in 2 buildings at Prince and Stone. Newport at the Rodeo, completed March 2024, 77 family units in 7 buildings on the Gallus Highway south of Irvington. And Belvedere Terrace, A 72-unit senior project expected to open at the end of this month or the beginning of January. Our projects have income ranges from 30 to 60% of AMI, a wide range of services. And so I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Just under time.
I try.
Thank you very much. Our next presentation will be the Glenstone Village Apartments. Do we have a representative from the Glenstone Village Apartments?
Who would that be, Andrew?
Andrew, you've got Ryan Zent and Riley Rahuba from Overland Property Group and Marianne Bierling from Compass. And I believe Tony Sims might be in the waiting room or non-panelist.
I'll promote him. And Vicky,
Thank you.
I'm trying to get you in as well.
Oh, I'm here.
Ryan, would you all like to share slides on your end, or would you like me to do it for you?
I think we're happy if you do it, Andrew. That'd be great.
All
If that's
right.
easier.
That's putting a lot of faith in my IT
know. I know you can do
capabilities.
it. You got us all in.
All right. Give me 2 seconds and I'll go share on my side. I assume now that you all can see the cover page for Glenstone Village.
Yes.
All right. Well, then, with that, I will turn it over to Ryan and the team. Start when you're ready.
Hi, everybody. First of all, I'd like to introduce the commission to Tony Sims, who is the new CEO at Compass Affordable Housing. He has been the CEO for 9 months, and so I thought Tony might like to say hello.
Thank you, Marianne, and thank you guys for the work that the city is doing in Tucson. And as we all know, Tucson grapples with affordability. And so one of the things that we're committed to is ensuring that the current properties that we have are not just livable, but places that help people thrive. So Marianne will, she spent the last 20 years working on this, so I'll turn it back over to her.
The feeling is that, being able to rehab an existing multifamily housing affordable project is a good social, economic and community investment. So, I will introduce you to the rest of the team as I go through this, but I have the fortunate opportunity of being able to work with Compass on this. The redevelopment and rehab of Glenstone Village. It was formerly Vita Serena Apartments. I was hired to get this tax credit project off the ground in 2008. It had substantial rehab, and for that time, it included, state-of-the-art equipment, heating and cooling, and energy efficiencies. However, they're obsolete now. And they're failing, and it's costing a bit of money and really affecting the cash flow because the rents are kept low and we don't charge utilities. So no one has to make a decision on whether or not to pay rent or utilities. It's a 72-unit, one and two, and studio unit apartments. It's well situated in the community. It's along a transportation corridor. It's got a lot of amenities and it's close to the amenities that the city would prefer. So we have had offers to purchase Glenstone now that we are no longer a tax credit project, and those offers have been generous. They would take it out of the affordable market, though, and that is not the mission of Compass. So, our decision has been to put together an application to rehab it. It's a strong community. We have seen so much happen over the course of its 15 years. Babies born on the property, parents and children moving in, next door to each other. People saving enough while they were living there to be able to buy their own homes. So it's a sturdy investment. The problem is we can't afford the maintenance. and the operating expenses that are a result of it. It does need upgrades and updates, including adding solar power so that we can keep the utility costs down. As we know, it's skyrocketing. So, in order to bring the strongest team possible together and ensure the success of the development, we partnered with Overland Property Group. So, they're an experienced affordable housing developer with a proven track record across the Western United States. Riley Rahuba and Ryan Zent are representing them today. And so, I'm going to hand it over to Riley with Overland Property Group.
Thank you, Marianne. So, as you can see, Tucson continues to face a
Oh,
deeply
can we
sustained.
move the slides down, Andrew? Yes, there you
One
go.
more,
Go to slide
please.
three.
Yeah, go to slide three, Andrew. Thanks.
There you
So,
go.
Tucson continues to face a deeply sustained shortage of affordable housing, with the greatest unmet need among households earning at or below 60% of the area median income. City Housing Analysis estimates the need for more than 35,000 additional housing units over the next decade, with a significant majority needed for low-income households. So, as you can see on this slide, Glenstone is located within the thriving new 05 Community Revitalization Area in an equitable transit-oriented development area with direct access to SunTrain around 19 along Stone Avenue, serving around 25,000 passengers per month.
One minute.
Based on the city's Home Opportunity Index, the site received an overall opportunity score of 52, reflecting strong access to services, mobility, and community amenities. The snippet on this slide includes the four subcategories that make up the score. And at the property level, demand is already well established and does not rely on speculative data. Glenstone has maintained stabilized occupancy, averaging approximately 95% or higher, with limited turnover and re-leasing periods typically under 1 month. The property maintains a formal, actively managed waiting list, currently including five pre-qualified households and eight additional households likely to be qualified when units become available. And finally, with respect to tenant relocation, vacancy will be created prior to closing through natural turnover, allowing rehabilitation to occur without permanent displacement, with temporary relocations occurring on-site by building. So taken together, these factors demonstrate strong, sustained demand and limited risk to long-term affordability. So I'll be passing on to Ryan to discuss the scope of rehab and the site amenities.
Coming up
All
on
right.
time.
Well, thanks, Andrew. The proposed scope of work delivers a comprehensive rehab to all of the residential units in the common areas, ensuring Glenstone can continue to provide safe and affordable housing
And
for the
we're at
next 15
time.
years. All right.
Sorry, Ryan.
No worries.
Thank you,
Thank
team.
you all for your time.
All right. Thank you. Next presentation we have will be from Mercy Housing. Do we have representatives from Mercy?
And who would those be?
Looks like Kuehl Brown. Thanks, Ernesto, and thanks, folks. I realize now that you may not all be populated as panelists up front, so bear with us. I appreciate that.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. I'm not seeing how to turn my video on, or I would, but oh, sorry, let me.
Bottom left.
He's not a panelist yet. Can't
Ah.
get he should be in now.
Hi, Andrew, am I clear to go?
You are on the screen, and I will first ask you if you would like to share your own slides or you would like me to do it.
I can share my own slides.
Okay.
I'll do that right now. Well, good. Okay.
Hang on, Gil.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, you should be good to go.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so yes, good evening, committee. My name is Kuehl Brown. I oversee the real estate development for Mercy Housing Mountain Plains. Mercy Housing Mountain Plains is a 501c3. We have been, oops, excuse me, let me get down to our mission here. We have been developing housing for the last 40 plus years. Nationally, we are located in Denver, Colorado, but have a strong presence in Arizona. Our mission is to create stable, vibrant, and healthy communities by developing and operating affordable and program-rich housing. We operate currently in about eight states, in the Mountain West mainly, and as part of the Plains. And we serve both families, seniors, and folks with special needs and permanently supportive housing. We've been 40 years strong in Arizona. The majority of our work has been in Maricopa County, but we do have a asset in Tucson, Arizona, which we're very proud of. It is the Western Winds Apartments that is located in North Tucson. One of the great things that sets Mercy apart are the resident services that we provide at all of our properties. We do wraparound case management and behavioral supports for the families and the seniors that we serve. A lot of the family properties we have also have out-of-school time supports for working families, financial stability and literacy, credit enhancement through positive pay is another program that we're rolling out. All of these services would be embedded in the Liberlost family flats that we're going to be looking at now. So up in front of us is a proposal for Liberlost family flats. Our proposed project would deliver 75 new affordable housing development opportunities and homes in the North Tucson region. We're also in a BRT terminus and an overlay for a priority for the ETOD area in the city of Tucson. We're approximately half a mile from the Tohono-Tahati Transit Center and along the new BRT route, as I mentioned before, a very transit-rich and walkable neighborhood. The site we're looking at is 4 acres at the northeast corner of Limberlost and North Thurston. It is a larger site of 4 acres, of which the current proposal would take up the northern half of roughly 2 acres. Phase two would likely be some mixture of either future affordable housing or homeownership opportunities in a mixed campus setting. We're offering approximately 50% averaged AMI. We will also be, through the 9% application, offering up to 15% of our units would be available for City of Tucson Section 8 waitlisted families that would like priority here. So we're really trying to hit a wide variety of income being served. 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms would be provided and likely in a 4-story elevator served development. As I mentioned, we would have a lot of project amenities on site, a children's play area. We would have a community room, fitness center, and other typical community amenities that we always put in our new developments, as well as the walkability of the entire area itself. So right now, we're really looking at 68% of our funding stack coming from the 9% area. We have a high leverage for the Tucson home that monies that have been requested. And we're really proud and hopeful to be using the city's new community corridor tool, which will allow for by right higher density on this site that otherwise would not have happened. So we're
One
really,
minute.
really, really looking forward to giving moving this one forward and seeing success on the site. And with that, I will end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kuehl. Thank you, Mercy, for your presentation. Ernesto, the next project and presenter is Miracle Ridge. I believe that is Shalini Hirban. I hope I said that correctly.
Shalini, do you want to present your slides or do you want Andrew to present your slides?
No, I can present if I can figure it out. So I have a join as panelist or stay as attendee.
I'm
Do I
trying
click?
to I'm trying to make you a panelist. Yeah, you should be a panelist. And I'll give you a co-host. Wait a minute.
Can you hear me?
Okay. You should have ability to share your screen.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can share your screen.
Oh, I am so sorry. Okay. So Which means I have to have the slides. No, I don't have that. I'm sorry. Can you do it?
Yes, I sure can. So bear
Sorry
with
about
me and I will get this up on the screen.
very
And
first time doing this, though.
well, we got it. All right. So hopefully now the screen, you'll see the Miracle Ridge Sober Living cover slide. And Shalini, I will turn it over to you. Let me know when you want me to move the slides, and I will give you a 1 minute warning when it comes down to the last minute of the presentation.
Perfect. Okay, so thank you. My name is Shalini Herman. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to do this. This is a Miracle Ridge. It's a sober living setup, and we're starting with this first house, and we plan to get this set up, and then there's another house right next door, which we plan to expand, and then we have some land in the back, which we plan to develop about 15 low-income homes. So that is the big picture, but right now we're focusing on this particular one. And as far as can you go to the next slide? Okay. And so in Tucson, there's a real obviously a real shortage of affordable housing, especially for individuals recovering. Without stable housing, many relapse or return back to homelessness. So sober living provides structure, accountability, and support, gives residents a space they need to focus on their employment and rebuild their lives. So that's what we're focusing on. I have see, this order is a little wrong. Okay. So Miracle Ridge is a provides affordable housing. We charge $750 per month so residents can focus on recovery, not survival. Community and need solutions. Okay. As far as the third slide, please. So this house is a six-bed resident with shared bedrooms, bathrooms, kitchen, dining, and common space that provides community and accountability. It also has it includes fence, backyard, courtyard space, and parking. These features improve safety and make it easy for residents to work and attend programs. It's also located in an area where it's walkability, where there's the bus stops and grocery store, bank, and even a little walk-in clinic. They're all in walking distance. And this rehab is very light, so we can quickly do the rehab and get it developed. We intentionally chose this existing house so we can open quickly with minimal rehab and keep the cost low. As far as slide four, please. Our biggest strength that we have is experience. My husband and I, we've owned and operated two assisted living homes for more than 7 years, managing staffing, inspections, compliance, and budgeting every day. So assisted living operations often require more regulations and oversight than affordable housing. So we are fully prepared and very comfortable with accountability and reporting for sober living home. I also manage rental properties and also have committed to personal savings and established credit lines to ensure adequate capital for this project. In addition, like I said, the seller is offering the neighboring house, which is a six-bedroom house, which we plan to convert to a sober living home. And also do some construction in the back to build some low-income homes, 15 of them. Our total development just for this housing is $322,750, of which $22,750 is what's costing to do the rehab and setup. This
1 minute.
keeps the risk low and efficient. 750, so occupancy at full capacity is 750. per person per and that's 90,000 approximately annually, which shows a positive operating income from day one. This home will serve 10 residents at a time, potentially dozens of individuals each year. Stable housing leads to recovery, employment, and long-term independence. We already have site control, experience, and complete commitment. With your funding assistance, we can move forward immediately and get started. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shalini. Our next presentation will be for Stone Commons.
Yes, Reed Butler here. And let me see if I can get this on the screen, please.
Hang on, Mr. Butler.
Thank you.
Okay, you should have the ability now.
Let's see. That is not letting me do that. Let's try
Okay.
a different way.
You do have co-host ability.
No, that's not letting me do that either. What, if you don't mind, if you could find our presentation, and we're
I'm
only going to
happy
show
to do
two
that.
slides. Thank you very much.
Please, prompt me when you'd like me to change. I'll try to be intuitive as I did with Shalini, but please let me know when I need to move it for you, Reed.
thank you very, very much. Again, Reed Butler, I'm the owner of Butler Housing Company, and my partner in this project is a company called Resource Housing Group out of Atlanta. Sam Coates and Jennifer Lynch are attending. So Butler Housing Company, we've developed 20 affordable housing projects in Arizona over the last 25 years. I've been building apartments in Arizona for about the last 40 years. We built almost all the apartments in the Tucson foothills in the 1980s and early 1990s. This project, Andrew, go to the next slide, please, is just north of downtown on Stone, on what, 6th Street, former Aviation Parkway. And the site is currently owned by Todd Sadow. Many of you know Todd. He's the founder of Epic Rides. I met Todd about 10 years ago when we built 7th Avenue Commons next door. Next slide, please. This slide shows literally the site is right in the middle of the picture. There are two or three buildings on the site, right on Stone, right there on 6th Street. 7th Avenue Commons is next door that we developed 10 years ago with support from the city of Tucson. This project is planned as 48 units of senior housing. 7th Avenue Commons next door is 50 units of family housing. And one of the big ideas on this site, next slide, please, Andrew. We hired A23 Studios, well known to many of you in Tucson, and we have teamed up with a construction company called Big D Construction and a modular construction company called Z Modular. That's really the big difference for me. This will be our second modular project in Arizona. We have one underway in Phoenix. Maybe go all the way to the next slide, please. And even after that, Andrew. This is just a conceptual drawing that shows it's a seven-story building. It's a very, very small site. Five stories of housing on two stories of parking. The housing, they're all one-bedroom units, so 48 one-bedroom units in total. Next slide, please. These are the elevations for the project in Phoenix. This is also affordable housing for seniors. This is 60 units. And again, modular construction. So the idea is to prove, I've been involved in 100 different apartment projects the last 40 years. The idea is to prove that we can use modular extremely cost efficiently. So that is part of the main idea for this project. A couple other points. Senior housing, this will have 55 years old plus and a broad range of income levels, as low as 30% AMI, which is probably high teens household income, maybe up to $40,000 in household income. We can just sit there on the slide and just finish up the presentation. So the rents will be as low as $438 a month. The rents will average about $799. But one of the key points for your group, because you have lots of great projects here and also in the applications to Pima County, this is a super competitive process to get awards of funding. All the other developers know this, all of you on the panel and City of Tucson staff know this. There is only enough funding for four or five projects in the entire state of Arizona outside of the rural and tribal communities, so four or five urban projects. So we've worked hard to only work on projects that have the highest possible score. We think this project will have a score, if not 100% score, very close to 100% score. So we would encourage you to support this so we can go compete as we all file for tax credits on April 1st, which is coming up. Appreciate your time.
Reed, thank you very much. All right. Next project up, Ernesto, is Drexel Commons.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we have Nathan.
Perfect. Yes, I'm here with Spire.
Nathan, you have a co-host ability.
Perfect. Can I see my screen?
Yes.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, hello, my name is Nathan Vail. I'm a development associate with Spire Development. We're an affordable construction company out of Columbus, Ohio. And to share, we have a current project being developed called Rincon Manor in the Barrio Nepal neighborhood that was just funded in part by the City of Tucson Home Consortium funding. But tonight we're presenting Drexel Commons, which is located at the southwest corner of Drexel Road and Bonnie Avenue in unincorporated Pima County. Here's the agenda for today. The project basics, there'll be a new construction rental housing for working families. We're applying for 9% LIHTC in 2026. We're applying for both gap funding and application points. We received $500,000 as presented earlier in Pima County gap funding and $2 million from the FHLB. Again, the site's located in the southwest corner of Drexel and Bonnie. It's located in the Alvaron I-10 Pima Prosper's infill and redevelopment district area, and as well as Supervisor District 2. Here's our location. The project will be 72 units, 28 one-bedrooms, 28 two-bedrooms, and 16 three-bedroom units. The AMIs will range from 30 to 60% AMI. It will be an open air central corridor with elevated service. We find the open air central air corridors create a quieter environment for buildings with families and children. The plans. The amenities will be a 5% that was section 504 accessibility and 2% for the sensory impaired. They'll include a lounge, a playground, leasing office, picnic, barbecue areas, as well as a fully loaded kitchen, as well as washer dryer hookups and walk-in closets and supportive services off by Compass. These are partners we're planning to work with. TOEFL Dent, as we all know, based Tucson, been near 100 LIHTC projects, and Athena Studio. They're based in Phoenix, completed about 25 LIHTC projects and over 2,000 units. We are currently working with these two on a Rincon Manor project, which is a great experience, and we believe working with them will unlock increased efficiency. Our approach to estimating total contract or construction budget was based on current and comparable prices from other LIHTC projects, both designed by Athena Studio, currently under construction, as well as 10% taste test data from the 2024 9% LIHTC projects we began construction last summer. Our soft costs are proposed in the application were based on our experience at the Rincon Manor. So the costs are submitted are all true to the real world. Please note that the Drexel is showing a slightly lower total development cost per unit because of the efficient site design and the slightly higher tax credit per unit due to the larger number of three-bedroom units. We're striving for a silver NGBS certification, PERS under 50, Energy Star guidelines. We're a vacant urban infill lot and looking to get 35 units per acre as stewardship of land. Again, we're targeting families in this one with an average income of 50% everything below 60% through a decommitment through 50 years. Some neighborhood amenities. We're right on a bus route. There's public parks, public schools. We're pretty close to the University Medical Center South, a Walmart neighborhood market, a Dollar, and major employment centers as Intuit, Amazon, Pepsi, Raytheon are just south of us. Here's a little map of it. We do not have an opportunity score as we're located in an unincorporated Pima County.
1 minute.
Additionally, we're addressing some of the HASTE and PCHIP priorities. The site is currently owned by Pima County. It was awarded to us and it's following a competitive RFP process run by the county. The County Board of Supervisors approved the purchase contract in March 2025. Outside of the HASTE and PCHIP, we're achieving some priorities with the Pima Prosper's infill and redevelopment project area, the Pima County Neighborhood and Community Growth Area, and the Pima County Regional Housing Strategy and Funding Plan. And as well as some community support, we've received a letter from County Supervisor Dr. Matt Hines for this project, and he's provided a letter of support here. And that is all for us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Our next presentation will be Habitat for Humanity's Mountain View Home Project. For the commissioners, I want to note that this year we had two separate and distinct RFPs. One was for the development of rental housing, and another was for the development of homeownership housing. So this Habitat for Humanity project was an application in response to the RFP for the development of homeownership housing. So slightly different, though your scoring criteria remain the same.
Who will be representing Habitat?
I suspect it will be Charles or Charlie Buchanan.
Buchanan. Okay, I'm going to promote Mr. Buchanan. Let's see. Mr. Buchanan, do you want co-hosting? Do you want to do your slides or do you want Andrew to do your slides?
Apologize, I was having trouble with controls there.
Mm-hmm.
I can do the slides, would be great. That way I don't
Okay.
have to bother Andrew.
Oh, no, you're not bothering him. All right, you should have that ability now.
See here. Okay, hopefully you can see okay.
We can.
Perfect. Well, commissioners and staff and peers, thanks for the opportunity to be here. My name is Charlie Buchanan. I'm the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Habitat Tucson has been a leader in affordable housing for just 45 years, built over 500 homes in partnership with the local community. And we're proud of the partnership we've held with the City of Tucson and Pima County. And delivery of this critical mission. Who we serve, our target population. Sorry, the controls here are not working. Our target demographic really is 40 to 80% of median income, and that's strictly for home ownership, and it truly results in people that want to earn a better opportunity in their life. And so we partner with amazing families that want a hand up and not a handout. And they're often economically marginalized or historically prohibited from access to capital and the things that they need for a better future. And so our motto is really powerful, and it's a sweat equity model where they contribute volunteer hours in the construction of their homes and the homes of their neighbors to earn their opportunity for home ownership. Our senior leadership team really comprised myself. I've been with Habitat 7 years, 30 years in nonprofit development. Jessica Carney is our CFO, and she would be the one responsible for any grants management compliance. She's a prior auditor. She has experience both in public and private funding, as well as federal compliance. And then Bill Updike is our director of construction and will be responsible for the implementation of the project. And he's a 49-year construction professional, both commercial and residential, and done both domestic and international construction projects. A little bit more about our model before we get into the actual project, but Habitat's, again, 40 to 80% of median income. We sell homes at appraised value, and then we carry those loans at 0% interest. And that really is how we introduce ownership to low-income communities. And the sweat equity model is really important as it creates neighborhoods, community, and partners with volunteers across our community in the construction and delivery of homes. Last year, we had just over 2,300 volunteers give 60,000 hours in support of this mission. And that really is a key ingredient, not only a reflection of the generosity of our community, but it's a key ingredient to ensure that everyone has a safe place to live. The Mountain View neighborhood is really an excellent opportunity. It's an undeveloped parcel, 2.4 acres, right here in central Tucson, located just northeast of Fort Lowell and Mountain Avenue. And it's currently undeveloped. Habitat received the parcel as a donation and has done some initial site planning in partnership with the Drackman Institute to develop the site plan that I'll share with you in a moment. And then we also, the southern third of the parcel is impacted by floodplain. So we engaged J.E. Fuller in looking at an encroachment study to ensure that our site plan would be supportive. Before I get farther into that, I just, as far as opportunity, this is a an excellent community for homeownership and for those we serve. It has close proximity to jobs, services, transportation. It's adjacent to the Equitable Transit Corridor. There's a bus stop within a quarter of a mile, but really a central location and something that we view as a great place for people to build families in their futures. This is the initial site plan that
One
we have
minute.
established here. We are looking at revisiting this plan just for the sake of efficiencies, as well as to see what opportunities present in the recently adopted middle housing opportunity passed by the city of Tucson. Our development budget is really a reflection of our historical costs, as well as those that, the efficiencies we've received through volunteer support. This funding is really critical because of our model. We don't recapture funding, and so we rely on both public and private support to pursue this real vital mission. So we appreciate the opportunity, the investment in homes and opportunity, and we hope to have the opportunity to partner further with you.
Thank you, Charlie. So we have our final presentation will be from Grey Door Development and Ian Shayat. Ian, I hope I said that correctly. Ian does not have slides to present, but will be giving us his 5-minute presentation. Ian, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great.
Can everybody hear me? My name is Ian Chait. Mom had to be difficult and say it was Ian, like Brian. And I am with Ingram Adams and North, which is working with the Grey Door Development Group. We specialize in taking blight properties and making them not so blight. We're looking at the Highland Tower Motel, which is a 25-unit motel. Most of them have kitchenettes. It's a very easy conversion into making it housing for low income. It's right on Oracle, not too far off of Speedway, right by Pima Community College. It gives plenty of opportunity to take an otherwise transient property and give people the stability in long-term rental, as well as a pride in community with their neighbors. And that's really all I have.
Ryan, thank you very much and apologize for mispronouncing.
No, it's all right.
Well, that We'll do it for our presentations. I'm going to reshare my screen for the benefit of the commission. So, commissioners, our next ask of you all, it will be to score each of the presentations as was laid out in the RFP. The presentations will, by you will be scored on a 0 to 25 point basis based on these criteria. As I indicated before, we will be sending out to you tomorrow morning score sheets that will kind of reiterate the criteria and then ask you all to individually score each of the presentations and send them back to me. And we and the community scoring panel will include your commissioners' scores along with the rest of the RFP rubric in coming up with the panel's overall score in order to make recommendations to mayor and council for funding approvals by February 21st. So similar to the story you heard from Pima County, staff will make recommendations to mayor and council by February 21st that will then officially be voted on by mayor and council at their second March meeting, I believe March 17th. So commissioners, do you have any questions for me or for staff as it relates to process?
Any questions, commissioners? I don't see any. Do you see any, Neto?
I do not.
Okay, with that, thank you so much, Andrew, for your time.
Thank
Appreciate
you
it.
all.
The next agenda item is tenants' rights to counsel. Our own commission member, Alan, from Southern Arizona Legal Aid, will give a presentation on tenants' rights to counsel when faced with eviction. Alan, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you. I need co-hosting ability, Ernesto, if you can
You do have
grab
that,
a button
Alan.
for me. I do have it now.
Yes.
Okay, so let me get myself set up. Hang on, sorry. There it goes. Okay. Let me share my screen. I'm not the best at PowerPoint, but I think it's going to work okay. So, tenants' right to counsel is my presentation. Just to introduce myself again for those that may not know or don't recall, I'm Alan Solot. I'm a lawyer. I work for Southern Arizona Legal Aid. And my primary practice area is doing eviction defense. I help low-income individuals who qualify for our services based on income when they're faced with eviction. I defend them. I supervise other lawyers and assist them in defending their clients as well. It's a very active practice, which I'm going to explain to you. So a little bit of an agenda, which is on our screen now. And by the way, I thought I was going to be here at 5:40, and it's now 5:10, so we're ahead of the game, which I appreciate. I maybe have more time to do this, but I'm not going to delay and take everybody's time. Everybody knows this, but just to say it out loud, eviction is a serious problem for society in terms of cost. And there are costs to this. I'm going to put a different item on the screen now. Presuming everybody can see that. This is a chart, if you will, that describes how what kind of negative long-term health outcomes arise from eviction. This is just health outcomes is just one of the bad things that happen from eviction. I'm fascinated by this study found that one of the negative health outcomes is low birth weight. But there's terrible things that are on here, including depression, sexual assault, coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, decreased life expectancy. It's a terrible thing. So
We have in preventing eviction, save society the cost of those negative health outcomes. That's the point of this, not to talk about how bad eviction is. We know that. My point is the expense involved in having evictions. So what is tenants' right to counsel? If we were to do this, it would mean that every eviction defendant gets an attorney. There's no merit screening, so nobody is told you don't have an attorney because maybe you don't have a defense, and in many cases don't have defenses. Everybody gets a lawyer, and I'm going to talk in a bit about why I think that's important, regardless of whether there's a defense. I have numbers I can share with you. In Pima County, we had 11,515 eviction cases in 2024. That the source of that is LSC, which is Legal Services Corporation. That's a corporation that is basically part of the federal government. They're not really a government agency, but they're effectively that. They are grant funders for 130 legal aid law firms in this country, and Southern Arizona Legal Aid is one of those. Because it's federal money, LSC has huge restrictions on how we can spend their money, but they also do things like provide this data. So there's a link there that shows where I got this data. They also said in that same link that according to LSC, 52% of people living in Pima County are rent burdened. As I'm sure all of us know, but just to say it, that means their rent is more than 30% of their income. So half of the county is rent burdened. And Pima County has a higher poverty rate than the national average. We have a lot of poor people in our county. Again, these are statistics that I've looked up and can back them up if anybody is concerned. What I found was that landlords almost always have lawyers. In over 10,000 cases in Pima County, we're looking again at 2024. 92% of those cases had lawyers. I'm repeating some of my stuff here, which I didn't realize. And of those cases, maybe 200 out of those 10,000 or out of those 11,000 tenants or defendants in the eviction have lawyers. So as we all know, there's a huge power imbalance with landlords and tenants. And this is really reflected in how landlords have funding and can afford lawyers and tenants can't. The typical tenant, if they could afford their rent, they would not be in eviction court. If they can't afford their rent, they certainly can't afford lawyers. Along with a few private law firms that Eales does refer cases to. But most of the people that are doing eviction defense is us, Southern Arizona Legal Aid, because tenants just simply can't afford it. I want to highlight one case I was recently in, just to describe the excuse me, the huge difference in outcome when there's a lawyer. So I was able to rather quickly locate the fact that the property that my client lived in had federally backed financing, which meant it was covered by the CARES Act, which meant that Arizona has a requirement for a 5-day notice so you can commence an eviction action after those 5 days expire and they don't pay or move out. But with it being federally backed mortgage on this property, it's a 30-day notice. And in my case, they didn't give a 30-day notice. They gave a 5-day notice and alleged it wasn't cover property under the CARES Act. After I took a little bit deeper dive, I found that that same tenant and that same landlord had six prior cases. In each one of those, there was a judgment for eviction. In each one of those, they alleged it wasn't CARES Act property when it was. After I figured that out, the landlord agreed to vacate all of those judgments and dismiss the cases and seal them, including my case. That client had no idea how to defend those cases, and as a result, got eviction judgments every time she appeared, and the system doesn't do anything for her. She's entirely on her own. So yeah, that's a pretty dramatic one, but I can tell you, I can give you example after example. It's clear the outcome is different with lawyers. And just as a sideline, this isn't really anything to do with tenants' right to counsel. So legal aid, my law firm, with me involved in it, did get a ruling from Superior Court that the CARES Act does apply, and we see 30-day notices all the time as a result. Nobody can move out in 5 days or pay. It seems to us 2 weeks is a minimum time for notice. So you get another paycheck in between at least. 30-day notice is very common in many parts of the country, and so we have that in Pima County when it's CARES Act property. So this is what I was referring to earlier, why I think that even if there is no defense, why we want to have a lawyer. First of all, let me define why there might not be a defense. Arizona law, I think this is common in all of our states. If a tenant doesn't pay their rent, and the landlord follows what's required to get an eviction judgment, the tenant will be evicted. And it's, our system elevates the right of the landlord to be paid over the right of the tenant to be housed. That's just how it works. So when they're evicted, many tenants really just don't understand what's going on, and they think that they'll get in front of the judge and tell them their story and why they can't pay. Their job loss, illness, something terrible happened to them. They spent their money on something else, which might be a mistake, but they did. None of that's a defense to an eviction case. None of that's a defense. And the judge won't even listen to it. I've been in many hearings when I'm not representing somebody and they start talking about why they're behind, and the judge says, no, I can't do anything with that. So defenses are hard to come by, but these the lawyers, there's a maybe four or five law firms in Arizona that do eviction cases for landlords. They and it's a volume practice. I have a habit when I'm in court at Pima County Justice Court to look at the calendar, and I'm waiting for my case, so I'm a little bored, and I start figuring out how many cases are for some of these law firms. Yesterday I did that. Two law firms had 25 or more cases on for that one day. My point in reciting all this is, with that volume practice, they make mistakes. I said earlier, the landlord follows the law and procedures, they get an eviction judgment. They don't always do that. And I find mistakes, and we get, it doesn't cure the problem, which is the tenant can't pay the rent, but it does mean there's not going to be an eviction judgment in this case. We have success in that kind of thing all the time. And there are defenses. There's procedural defenses like I'm talking about here, but we have federal and Arizona defenses, basically fair housing. Both the federal government, federal system in Arizona has fair housing requirements. And it's again, pretty common that if you ask the question of a tenant, why did you stop paying? I had one recently. She stopped paying because she wasn't okay to work and lost income because she was pregnant. There's case law that defines pregnancy as a potential disability. Fair housing law does not, that fair housing law prohibits discrimination against disabled people. And so the strategy here is that you ask for a reasonable accommodation and a payment plan if the client can do that. And that's a defense. There's lots of nuances to these things, lots. Andy Flagg, some of you must know him. He's with EELS, Emergency Eviction Legal Services, is a Pima County agency. I spoke to him to confirm this. He said before EELS, tenants had a 1% success rate. I don't exactly know how success is defined, but for me, success is you get another day in your home. That's success. It's a very low bar, but people get evicted all the time. So Andy said when EELS provided a full representation attorney, the success rate balloons to 50%. Is it truly 50 times better to have a lawyer than not? I don't know, but that's what the statistics show. Having a right to counsel will level the playing field and lead to fewer eviction filings. Evictions, I can show you a plenty. Evictions are costly for landlords and for tenants. We don't want evictions. Mayor and council are asking, how can we prevent evictions? I'm trying to propose a way here that will prevent evictions, and it does level the playing field. Fewer evictions will lead to a lower cost to society and eventually lower cost for RTC, because as we do this, it's shown in other jurisdictions that the eviction filings go down, sometimes as much as 10 or more percent. There are presently in our country 27 jurisdictions that have right to counsel. I think there's five states. I can't remember all of them. Most of them are cities like Tucson, San Francisco, New York, I think Los Angeles, Washington State has right to counsel. And that link I have on the screen there will lead you to this information. And I also mentioned the Stout study. That Stout study is in the materials you've been given for today's meeting. The city of Phoenix commissioned that study last spring, about a year ago almost. And so a selling point, I don't know if it's much of a selling point, but we like to try to pretend we have the ability of competing with Phoenix. Maybe Tucson should do it before Phoenix gets it. I don't know where Phoenix is at with it, but they're considering it. The study, if you look at it, is in depth, and if you look up Stout, they've done these kind of studies. They're really good at it. There's tons of them they've done. They just did one for the city of Phoenix, and so I've extrapolated my analysis from the Stout study. And I recommend looking at it. It's too much for anybody to read, but if you start looking at it, you'll see really interesting things that come out of this. So, if for Maricopa County, they estimate $25 million a year to provide right to counsel, and that would cover 16,000 defendants. So, when I use those numbers and basically divide by five for Pima County, not exactly, but it's something like that, I get maybe 4,400 cases a year. I'm basing this on the 2024 numbers that I had access to when I did this. And I arrive at about $1,550 a case, or $6.8 million for Pima County. It's a lot of money, no question. But the effect of that is dramatic. We can start with a small pilot project if people think that's the best way to go. I think there's very good basis to do this all in. And I would argue for that, but trying it out first is something that should be considered if that's too much money. The Stout study shows a $2.5 benefit for every dollar spent on RTC. When I talk to people who are smarter than I am, they say those are conservative estimates. My law firm several years ago analyzed this kind of thing, and they said for every dollar invested in SAW, $6 goes back into the community. That's a more liberal estimate, but the point being, which someone made earlier, I think, in a different context, spending money like this is economically the best thing to do. That's what it is. Fewer evictions avoid these health outcomes I showed you earlier, which means there's Medicaid reimbursements are going to be lower. That saves money. Saves homelessness. What's the cost of homelessness to society? I don't have numbers, but we all know it's expensive to house homeless people and to do everything that arises from it. It promotes family stability, which is obviously a key thing that nobody could possibly argue is not a good goal. I mentioned earlier, I'll say it again, mayor and council have continued to emphasize need for eviction prevention. Right to counsel does exactly that. It prevents evictions. There's going to be a deterrence effect on bad acting landlords. There's going to be less crime, so less necessary for police and emergency services, and the accompanying reduction in the cost of that crime might cause. The disruption involved in evictions causes kids to education to suffer. Suffer may be a mild word. So we get better education outcomes if we prevent evictions. We can just go on with this kind of stuff. The hypothetical case I have on there isn't the best thing, but I thought I'd use it anyway. We have a family with Section 8 subsidy, they get $2,000 a month. We get a lawyer, they find defenses, get the case dismissed, housing saved, subsidy saved. What that means is, maybe you don't know, but I'll tell you, if you have a Section 8 voucher and get evicted, you lose your voucher. It's a huge blow to lose your housing, but worse is that voucher is almost valueless. So in my example, that's an annual savings of $24,000. And it avoids the education and work disruption, trauma. It's definitely trauma involved in eviction. It's horrible. It's just horrible. And they have stable housing. It's a result everybody wants. So that is my presentation. What I'm asking the commission to do is vote to recommend the city to mayor and council work on getting right to council as something that Tucson has. That's what I'm asking for.
Thank you, Alan. We'll take any questions, but I do have a question for Anne Chinecka if she's still on. Are you still on, Anne, as it relates to this proposal?
I am.
Oh, great. With the emergency declaration, did mayor and council consider any type of relief in regards to eviction prevention? And if not, is that something that the resolution would allow to bring up as some sort of temporary response, if not a permanent solution immediately, maybe a emergency temporary position.
Yeah, I would say a couple things. That was not part of the emergency declaration. And again, I'll send out the link to the wording for that. And as the advisory group, you always are recommended, or you always are welcome to send recommendations to mayor and council. So I would say you can always, based on what you feel like is best practices in your hearing, your role is to advise them. And then I do believe we're still trying to set up those meetings. So that might be an opportunity to mention it to them too.
Great. So, Alan, I would suggest that maybe, and I don't know that it's I this isn't subsid the emergency declaration isn't subsidized, right, Anne? So there's no funding attached to it. So I think it wouldn't be an ask to temporarily make sure that this is funded during the emergency, but maybe we can make some sort of eviction prevention ask in this emergency time. And maybe that's something we can mull over and perhaps put on an agenda for next time. I know we're going to review agenda tomorrow for the next meeting. Is that something you're interested in, Alan, in addition to taking a vote right now on a permanent solution?
Yes. Yeah, I want to see this thing move forward in whatever form or fashion that happens will make me happy. The goal of having this in Tucson seems one very difficult to achieve, especially with the kind of numbers we're looking at. But I that doesn't want to I don't want to not try without I don't want to not try. Another thing I meant to mention, and I obviously forgot, we have a when I was talking to Andy Flagg, he raised this and I already knew it. We have Pima County and Tucson as separate government agencies or government jurisdictions. And this is a Pima County issue, not a City of Tucson issue. And so I don't know, I don't have an answer to that. I just am aware that that's an issue is we the vast majority of evictions are City of Tucson, but Pima County is City of Tucson. The EELS program is a county program. So I don't have any position on how I do that because I have no idea. But I just want this to be.
Maybe, Alan, another thing that should be considered is maybe the Pima County Housing Commission meeting might be something that we want to address them with. So,
Sure.
Alan is okay. So, Alan's asking for a vote on us making a recommendation to somehow put forth in the future this proposal for mayor and council to consider tenant right to counsel. And then I think we should also vote on. Maybe Alan, you can go to a future meeting. There's one on Friday, February 20th, Pima County Housing Commission. Neto, maybe you can get some contact information to Alan for that housing commission. And if it's probably too late to get on the agenda for February 20th, but maybe Alan, if you talk to the housing commission and get on their agenda for the next, noticed available
Excellent.
meeting.
I'd be eager for that.
That sounds good. So, do we have a motion to vote on advising to mayor and council to take a look at right to counsel? And then Alan can be our spokesperson to mayor and council on further information.
I would assume if they're interested in this at all, that I would go to a meeting and council meeting and do what I just did.
Any thoughts? Jim, you just turned your camera on.
I'll go ahead and make a motion.
Okay, any second?
This is Vicki. I'll second.
Very good. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any nays? Any abstentions? Very good. Then, Neto, if you could assist Alan in also getting in contact with,
Will
I
do.
don't know, should they go through you, Anne, or
Yeah,
if
how
Alan
does this
wants to address?
recommendation take place? I mean, is there a letter we send or just an email or what how does this get communicated?
Yeah, procedurally, does someone have a recommendation?
This is for getting on Pima County's
No,
meeting?
for the city
No, this is
council.
for mayor and council. Yeah,
Communicated
so.
recommendation.
Yeah, like before, I would say a couple things. One, always writing is good. So submitting a letter of, this is a commission recommendation. And then when you do get in front of them, which my understanding is will be set up when Jay gets back, it's always good to reiterate when you meet with them in person. But I would say both those.
Okay. So, Alan, we'll follow up with Jay when he returns to make sure we get a draft of a letter, and I'm sure he'll be contacting you for that, and we'll take it
Yeah,
from
of
there.
course.
And then in the meantime, Neto, if you could get some information to Alan regarding the Pima County Housing Commission meeting on February 20th for contact, Alan will follow up that way.
Will do.
That sounds great. I
Very
appreciate all that.
absolutely. Anything else or any other questions for Alan?
I do. Sorry, I was going to raise my hand there. Just curious, because I've worked with other jurisdictions around this kind of thing, and they've also, other communities have put forward new regulations, recommendations for eviction. So, besides the right to counsel, are you aware of other areas that could have some changes to the rules that would make it more equitable for tenants?
Yeah, sure, of course. That's a vastly different issue.
Right.
But the eviction process we have in our state is state statutes, and to make
Okay.
changes in those requires legislation and signature by a governor. So like the 5-day notice of eviction, if you could make that 14 days, that would be a marvelous thing, even though 14 days is a short time period, but at least again, theoretically, another paycheck cycle happens. That requires the state legislature to amend the statute. Last year, in last year's legislative session, I don't know the numbers. But it took maybe one page plus a line or two on the next page of legislative proposals that were all made by Democratic legislators to make changes to the state law and landlord-tenant issues. One of those was discussed in committee and didn't get out of committee. The rest of them weren't even discussed.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure where the line was, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. The next agenda item are just some announcements, and I don't think we've had an opportunity yet to talk about all of the subcommittee meetings. Did we do that last week, Jim? Were you present? I know you had like part of the meeting.
I was there for a little bit, but I don't know that we did. I wasn't there for that portion.
No, we didn't. Ben saying no. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and read off the next meeting. But again, I know for Housing First in particular, since it's no longer a federal priority, that we might not be meeting on Housing First until we figure out some name changes and or agenda changes. So affordable housing is Wednesday, February 18, 4 to 6. Equitable housing strategies, Thursday, February 19, 1 to 2:30 p.m. Housing First is Tuesday, February 24, 4 to 5:30 p.m. Mobile housing working group, which is an ad hoc working group, February 26, 1 to 2:30 p.m. Again, the next Pima County Housing Commission meeting is Friday, February 20 at 8:30 a.m. There's also links on there to look at the website and any future or past agendas. Our next commission meeting is when, Neto? I see.
Let me jump in, and I'm going to upend everything you just said.
Okay.
So you beat me to this.
Okay.
Let's start off with the next commission meeting. Staff is requesting that the commission move its meeting on March 5th. Staff will be busy at a South 10th community meeting, and if we could move it back a week later to the 12th. That's our ask of the commission.
Well, I know there's a there's there's a housing conference the 12th and the oh, actually no, it's May. Okay. Does anyone have any issues with the movement of the meeting from the 5th to the 12th?
I'm looking at my calendar and it's fine.
Fine with me.
Okay. Jim?
That's good with us, but we're going to also try to be moving the affordable housing
We'll
subcommittee.
get that in a moment.
Okay.
Okay. It looks like we're okay with a move
We can
to
move to the 12th.
March 12th.
Okay. To the affordable housing, Jim has asked that the meetings be moved from Wednesday to either the second Tuesday or Thursday. And committee members, Serena, Maggie, and Logan are good with the second Tuesday of the month. Jim, are you still good with second Tuesday of the month?
I am.
Okay, see the big thumbs up. So we will be now the next second Tuesday is next week. Do you want to try to keep that meeting or cancel till March?
My problem is I'm out of town tomorrow through Monday.
Okay. Then we'll set it for March
Yeah, I
first.
just don't know how we can get an agenda out.
Right. So we'll set it for the second Tuesday in March. Equitable housing strategies will not meet on Thursday the 19th because Jay is out of town. Housing First will not meet this month. And the mobile housing working group is not meeting in February. The group is now moving to every other month. It's going to reorganize as Ray, who has stepped down from the commission, will continue to be involved, but likely not to be the coordinator. But we're working on that. So all in all, the subcommittees are canceled for this month. And again, just to reiterate, the next full commission meeting is March 12th. How's that?
Very good. Nothing more on the agenda. We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks,
Thank
Tisha.
you. Thank
Thank you,
you.
Tisha and all. Bye.
Bye.